Honeysuckle Cottage stood empty, and William, who took a great interest in Honeysuckle Cottage, always made a short detour on his way home from school in order to see if there were any signs of new inhabitants. His joy, therefore, was great when one evening he saw unmistakable signs of occupation and an easel standing in the little garden. An artist! Next morning he was up early and made his way to Honeysuckle Cottage. He crept cautiously up the path and peered in at the open kitchen door. And there he stood motionless, for a most extraordinary couple were engaged upon preparations for breakfast. Both had exactly the same face, pale and narrow, framed in short, lank, fair hair. Both wore white silk shirts and coats of homespun tweeds. That one was a man and the other a woman was evident from the fact that one wore knickerbockers and the other a skirt. Beneath these garments they wore worsted stockings and brogues. Both were leaning over the gas stove, the man anxiously watching a saucepan of six eggs, the woman making coffee. The woman turned round suddenly and saw William standing in the open doorway. "Watch this and see that it doesn't boil," she said to him casually, "or else take those plates into the dining room."
"I'll take the plates," said William, thrilled at being thus accepted as a member of the party.
He carried the plates into the dining room. The man followed him.
"These eggs are done, I should think," he remarked. "Have I done too many? I just put in all the man brought."
"Oh, no," said William reassuringly. "I don't think there are too many."
The man seemed cheered.
"No, I suppose there aren't."
The woman came in with the coffee, and he pointed to her, to William, and to himself.
"No, of course, just two each, isn't it? That's not too many."
William sat down. The woman passed him a cup of coffee, the man gave him two eggs, and the meal began. The strange couple accepted him without question. Suddenly the woman looked at him and said,
"Why aren't you drinking your coffee?"
"Oh, I never drink coffee," said William. "I don't like it."
She looked at the man and sighed.
"He's right, you know," she said. "One shouldn't drink stimulants of any sort if one wants to keep the psychic faculties unclouded."
She turned to William again.
"What do you drink?"
"I drink licorice water, mostly," said William.
"Licorice water," she said vaguely. "Oh, I must try it."
William, who had finished his eggs, murmured something about going home to breakfast and departed quietly homeward, where he made an excellent breakfast of porridge, scrambled eggs, toast, butter and marmalade. After school, he made his way at once to Honeysuckle Cottage. The man was seated at an easel in the little orchard and the woman in a deck chair on the little lawn. She looked at William and said,
"Do you see nature spirits?"
William stared at her in amazement.
"Children often do see them," went on the lady, "though my great friend Alyssa Freedom, you may have heard of her, she's well known in the psychic world, says that she didn't see them as a child, though she sees them now quite plainly. I really must show you some of her photographs. She has a lovely one of a birch tree with the outline of a nature spirit standing near it. About the size of a child, faint, you know, but quite unmistakable. She says that everything in nature has its attendant spirit, of the same colour, generally. I've brought a camera with me, but so far I haven't had any success."
"Uh-huh," agreed William, completely mystified.
"That, of course, is why Tristram and I have come here," she went on. "Tristram is my twin brother. We want to cultivate our psychic faculties. My brother will surrender himself to psychic influences in the hope of doing inspirational painting, and I'm going to try to cultivate my psychic vision till I can see a nature spirit. I take it that you're interested in the psychic side of life?"
"Uh-huh," agreed William again.
"Have you had any experiences?"
"Me?" said William. "Oh, yes, lots." But before he could tell her any of his favourite imaginary exploits, the church clock struck five, and she rose slowly from her deck chair.
"Oh, it's tea time, I suppose. Of course, one shouldn't really drink stimulants when one's trying to acquire psychic vision."
As they entered the kitchen, she turned suddenly to William.
"What did you say you drank?"
"Me," said William. "Oh, licorice water, mostly."
"Licorice water? I don't think I've ever tasted it. Where do you get it?"
"Oh, I make it," said William modestly.
He pulled a bottle out of his pocket and with the air of great gallantry poured some into a saucer for her to drink. She tasted it with a critical frown. The frown vanished.
"It's very nice," she said. "A pure herbal drink, of course."
"Uh-huh," said William.
"You must show me how to make it," she said.
William was thrilled. He'd never before met a grown-up who did not look upon licorice water as a messy juvenile concoction to be thrown away whenever discovered. Tristram came in from his easel in the orchard. His sister poured him a saucer of the licorice water.
"I thought, Tristram," she said, "that during this retirement from the world we should give up stimulants. They dull the psychic faculties, you know, so we're having licorice water."
Tristram tasted it.
"Delicious," he said, "quite delicious." "The boy made it," said his sister, "but I dare say the stores could get it for us. The boy always drinks licorice water, and he says that he's had psychic experiences."
William had come to the conclusion that psychic was a synonym for exciting. The woman said,
"Have you had any success, Tristram?"
"Oh, not exactly," he confessed. I surrender myself and try to paint what comes into my head, as it were, but I can't help realizing that it isn't as good as the work in which I don't surrender myself."
The activities of the sister, whose name William had discovered was Miss Oriole Manister, were not very exciting. She sat gazing wistfully about the little garden, her camera poised for action upon whatever nature spirit should appear to her. She asked William to leave the garden undisturbed to her between 4 and 5 o'clock, explaining that she thought her psychic functions were most active then. But William was finding the artist in the orchard even more interesting than the vision seeker in the garden. The artist sat before his easel with a palette in his hand, executing on his canvas a series of amazing strokes that reminded William of the nightmare he'd had after last year's November the 5th firework display. The artist noticed William's expression, and said in his gentle, melancholy voice,
"It's not meant to represent what one sees, you know. It's meant to represent the emotions the sight of it rouses in one."
Yes, said William, trying to sound as if he understood. William hadn't realised that painting pictures, real pictures, was quite as easy as that, simply splodging paint about anyhow. It simplified the art considerably. He surreptitiously tore pages out of his exercise books at school and took them to the cottage with him. There he borrowed paint very cautiously till he found that the artist took the situation as a matter of course. If William happened to be using the paint tube he wanted, he would wait quite patiently till William had finished with it. Gradually, William came to look upon himself as a finished artist. He boasted of his skill to his friends till Ginger said, "All right, paint us something then and let's see." "All right, I will," said William. "What'll I paint you?"
"Paint us a sign to put up at the old barn."
"All right. What'll I paint on it?"
"A lion."
William began his lion that evening. Tristram was working indoors in watercolours, both of them set to work side by side. Once Miss Oriole looked in and whispered,
"How are you getting on, Tristram?"
And Tristram said,
"I'm surrendering myself utterly, but I don't know what the results will be." "Oh, I do hope it'll be all right," said his sister, and added, "I'm waiting and watching with my camera outside."
William finished his lion. He considered it an excellent lion. It looked as spirited and ferocious as a lion ought to look. He went outside to look at Miss Oriole. She was asleep in a deck chair with her camera on her knee. Then he went home and didn't realise till he was in bed that he'd left his lion behind in the little studio. After school next day, William took Ginger round to the cottage. They entered the garden cautiously and crept towards the study window.
"My painting's in here," said William.
Then he stopped. Through the study window he could see his two friends and a strange man with a beard standing round the little desk. He retreated.
"We'll wait till they come out," he said.
"Let's have a game of hide-and-seek," said Ginger.
"All right. I'll hide, you count."
"One, two, three..."
William crept down to the bottom of the lawn where the heap of grass cutting stood, and with a dexterous movement inserted himself into the very middle of it. Soon he heard Ginger shout,
"Come!"
and stop suddenly. Then he heard the sounds of the lady setting up her deck chair on the lawn. William remained in his grass heap, wondering what to do. It was the hour during which the lady had asked him to leave her undisturbed. For a moment he considered remaining where he was till the end of the hour. But he was already tired of swallowing grass cuttings. If he waited just a few minutes, it would be all right. She'd be fast asleep. He waited till he imagined that he heard deep breathing, then rose from the heap, fled behind the greenhouse and out through a hole in the hedge. Simultaneous sounds of a gasp and a click pursued him. Scattering grass cuttings at every step, he hastened down to the road. He eventually found Ginger hanging about the gate of the cottage.
Hello, he greeted William. I had to go because she came out. Where were you hiding?
In the grass.
Well, let's try and get your painting now.
They entered the little garden again. Tristram was just joining his sister on the lawn.
Tristram, she greeted him excitedly. I've seen one. I've seen one. Oh, my dear, it was so thrilling. I was sitting here as usual with my camera, watching and waiting, when suddenly from that grass heap there detached itself a faint green wraith, a shadowy spirit. Oh, for one second I saw it standing by the heap as plainly as I see you now, and then it disappeared.
You got a snap of it, I hope, said Tristram anxiously.
Oh, yes, my dear, oh, I hope so. If what I saw comes out, I can die happy. Oh, and what about your paintings, my dear?
Tristram's face clouded over.
Oh, it's no good. Tosha says that none of them will do for the journal. He says they aren't inspirational enough.
Oh, Tristram, I am so sorry. Oh, where is he? Has he gone?
No, he's still in the study. His train doesn't go till 1:30.
Oh, let's go out for a walk, dear. It will do you good. He won't mind being left till his train goes, I'm sure.
Together, the twins set off for their walk. Together, Ginger and William crept round to the little studio. But the man with the beard was still there.
Well, I can't get it now, said William.
I don't believe you ever did it, said Ginger.
All right, said William. You wait till tomorrow.
Tomorrow came, and William went into the little studio, but he couldn't find his lion painting. Ginger spent a pleasant day jeering at him, and then they both completely forgot the incident. There were all the signs of departure at Honeysuckle Cottage. Boxes stood packed on the doorstep. The decrepit village taxi was at the little gate. William hung about disconsolately. He was sorry to say goodbye to his friends. Suddenly he saw the postman at the gate, and he went down to get the letters. There were two bulky packets, one for Tristram and one for his sister. Auriel fell upon hers with a cry of joy and unwrapped 6 papers bearing the inscription Psychic Realm.
Oh, my photograph, she said, turning over the pages with trembling fingers. Then she gave a scream of excitement. Ah, here it is. Look.
William and Tristram looked. There was a photograph of the grass heap at the end of the lawn, and by it the grass-covered figure of William preparing to creep furtively away. Beneath it was the legend, Nature Spirit, photographed by Miss Auriel Manister. William gaped at it, speechless with amazement. Before he could say anything, however, Tristram too had uttered a cry of surprise and excitement. He too had unwrapped 6 copies of Psychic Realm and had a letter in his hand.
Listen, he said, it's from Tosha. He says, after you'd gone, I found a really splendid bit of inspirational painting in your studio. Why didn't you show it to me? It's truly inspired. I have called it Vision, and it's reproduced on page 26.
Both of them turned over the pages frenziedly.
Here it is. Look.
And there was William's lion, and underneath the words, Vision, inspirational painting by Mr. Tristram Manister.
But do you know, said Tristram in an awestruck voice, I haven't the slightest memory of ever doing it.
You must have done it in a state of ecstasy, dear, said Miss Auriel reverently.
I must, said Tristram. It's the most wonderful thing that's ever happened to me.
Then the cab driver called to them, saying that blimey they'd miss it if they didn't hurry, and they'd gone before William recovered the power of speech. They had, however, left a copy of Psychic Realm behind them, and William, with mingled feelings of pride and bewilderment, picked it up and put it in his pocket. He showed the two pictures to everyone he knew, pointing out that the nature spirit was himself and that he had executed the inspirational painting of Vision. No one, of course, believed him.